Hi, I'm Brittany Ashley, your host of Breaking Norms, Building Dreams, your guide through this transformative journey in both business and life. This is your place crafted for dreamers, doers, or anyone who has been told they can't. Get ready as we challenge those narratives together. You're tuning in live to the United Public Radio Network, airing on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. We are streaming on all the popular platforms every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join me for a candid and thought-provoking conversation celebrating your unique journey because you are worth it. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited today to have Kendall with us. Welcome to Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. I'm your host, Brittany Ashley, and we are broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. Get ready to escape the routine and join us for the next hour as we break norms and build dreams with Kendall today. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'll do a quick bio. As I told you, I didn't want to go too in-depth because I would like you to tell the listeners more about who you are and what you do. And again, for sure. I'm so excited for you to be here because we have so many different topics that we can kind of like navigate in.
Oh, yeah.
So Kendall is an ADHD certificate educator from Calgary, Canada. She holds a BA in behavioral science and BED in elementary education and is an ADHD certificate educator. She was a classroom teacher for 8 years and worked with many students who had ADHD. Kendall was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 24. Through learning and managing her own ADHD and supporting families of children with ADHD, she's developed the ADHD toolkit, which I have yet to even dig into. I'm really excited to even to learn more today about that. The ADHD toolkit has educated and supported families of children with ADHD from all over the world through a digital course and coaching, a course for adults with ADHD and their parents. And their partners will be launching this fall in 2024 with additional courses for teachers and young adults coming in the future. I'm so excited to learn more. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. Why don't you, because I did a little bio there, but maybe you can tell us more kind of how your journey kind of started and we can kind of start that way.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in a neurodivergent home. My dad definitely has ADHD, finally diagnosed later on in life, but we've made jokes about it for years. But my sister was actually diagnosed in fifth grade, which for girls in the early 2000s, that was very early. But I was not diagnosed in childhood. I actually had my seventh grade teacher. Oh, that woman was far more patient with me than I think I understand, even to this day. But she was the first one to actually suggest that I might have ADHD. I remember being quite offended. And because my parents were wrapped up in my sister's struggles and trying to figure out what was going with her, they actually don't even remember that conversation, interestingly.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then it wasn't until university when I started researching ADHD more, trying to understand my sister and having an interest in ADHD as a whole, that I kind of went, this might be me. And then through my education degree and and into teaching, I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is me. I remember one day, I think it was in my first year of teaching, might have been my second, walking to our learning support teacher at our school, being like, I think I might have ADHD. And she went, you think? And I went, oh, it's that obvious. Hey, okay, cool. And so with that started kind of the journey of really, truly investigating it for myself. And it was in my second year as a teacher that life just kicked back and I couldn't cope anymore. Every single day after school, I had to have a nap. Either I would pass out right on my desk or get home and fall asleep. I couldn't do anything else. And so through all of that, I ended up diagnosed at the age of 24 and have been learning about how to manage my own ADHD as well as support my students. That led me to kind of this understanding that ADHD is an incredibly complex disorder, far more complex than what is shown in like the diagnostic criteria. And parents, unfortunately, when kids get a diagnosis of ADHD, that's kind of it. Like some professionals will be like, okay, so you can maybe see a psychologist or like maybe go on meds. And that's kind of where you're left. There's no true education or like exposure to here's all the pieces of ADHD.
Yeah.
Because it's not reflected in the diagnostic criteria.
Yeah.
Through that I developed this, like an in-depth training, helping parents understand, and then doing it through a neurodivergent affirming lens. So through the lens of we're not broken, and we don't need to be fixed.
Yeah.
But that being said, the world is definitely not set up for us, and it's a struggle to survive, let alone thrive, in a world that is built so strongly for neurotypical brains. We just need different tools and strategies to be able to thrive in this environment.
Yes, I love that. And I came across, I think it was your TikTok account, actually.
Yeah.
And I made a comment to you. I made a comment to you and be like, oh my goodness, I wouldn't have reached out to you knowing that you had that many followers on Instagram.
It's funny, yeah, because TikTok is definitely by far my lowest reaching platform, and I'm okay with that. Instagram is definitely where I have the majority of my community. So,
but that's good. You know where to kind of show up and be there, and you can just cross promote. But when I reached out to you, I saw a lot of your content, and it resonated a lot with me. As I told you, I'm like self-diagnosed with ADHD, and we're doing like a two-part series. So for all the listeners, kind of understand, we're doing this one particularly on kids, and then we have a next one. I should have wrote that down.
It's in I think June. I want to say later.
Yeah, it's later about adults a little bit more and understanding how we can kind of navigate with ADHD. So I'm so excited to have like a two-part series. So please come back and have more questions, but really throw your questions in the chat as we kind of dig into this. But yeah, I really resonated a lot with your content, because as somebody also just navigating it, not just for myself, but understanding it for my kids, because you might be able to on this, if anyone's listening, because I can see that there's some listeners, that it's hereditary.
Highly, highly hereditary. So twin studies have shown that ADHD has the same heritability factor, or like how they qualify it numerically, but it has a similar heritability to human height. So when you look at twin studies, the equivalent height in twins and how genetic that is, same thing with ADHD. It is so heritable. So studies show that if one parent has ADHD, each child has about a 50% chance of having ADHD.
And it, and I also mentioned too, I have dyslexia. So the combination of the two, like I'm always like, I can't wait to dig in more, but I definitely know like those with dyslexia, it can be passed down. I don't know if you know exactly if it's more like female to female, that it's more likely, or?
So ADHD is interesting. They found for sure a handful. I want to say, I can't remember the latest number, but it's about 11 or 12 different genes that are directly contributors to ADHD. There are 40 plus genes that are potential contributors to ADHD. And what they found is the more of these genes you inherit, the more extreme or severe your ADHD traits will be.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. Because I just wondered too, like, because we were just talking about like when you got diagnosed, how many might not even know that they have been also that might have some of these symptoms, or not, I don't even want to say symptoms.
Traits. I call them ADHD traits.
Thank you. I'm like, I don't really want to say symptoms. Traits that kind of been slipped through the cracks, especially for girls, because I have a young girl and I'm just super hyper vigilant on this. And so is there anything you can kind of recommend for parents who have kids that you kind of know that ADHD runs within your family, any things to kind of like watch for?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's so many part of what makes ADHD so incredibly complex is that there are so many different traits of ADHD, and each one of them can present more strongly or less strongly for each of us. And then each of those traits can be more internal or more external. So as an example, organization is an executive function that is impacted by ADHD. So externalized struggles with organization is looking like their room is a disaster and they can't seem to keep it tidy and organized. But internalized struggles with organization could look like struggling to put their thoughts in order in a way that makes sense, or struggling to even structure sentences in a way that makes sense, struggling to get their ideas out in an organized fashion. So there's externalized elements and internalized. And I think one of the most beneficial things that parents can do is get educated on the breadth that of ADHD traits, because it is so broad and it really does affect every area of our life.
And I'll just kind of talk to like my kiddos, just because I'm super, just because I went through my own, I think I can pick up, like I was talking to you, I pick up on a few things that maybe some people might not that have experienced as a growing up. So like my daughter, I find she gets very, like she does not like to lose at a game, and very emotional and very, I was just talking to the pediatrician about all these things. And so they're like, so we have like all these things now that we're trying to watch for, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that all she's set and ready to go when she's within school, because unfortunately, kiddos, if they're late in diagnosis and they're struggling in school, like with exams and, or any kind of the structure, we can try to mitigate that now than later, because the anxiety about all that.
And it, girls in particular tend to cope with their ADHD by leaning into people pleasing and perfectionism. Now, that's not true for every girl, nor is it true that every boy presents, you know, another way. And we know that, you know, there's differences in gender, and biological sex as well as gender and gender presentations. So none of this is like set in stone, girls are this way, boys are this way, because that's not true. But as a generalized way of looking at it, girls tend to lean towards people pleasing and perfectionism and internalizing their symptoms or their traits. And because of that, girls are a lot harder to identify. The other thing to be aware of with girls is that dopamine, so we, one of the struggles for people with ADHD is we lack dopamine, or we're not able to appropriately use dopamine that's available in our brain. We struggle with dopamine. And dopamine is impacted by estrogen in our bodies. And so as soon as girls, we have a cycle, we have a monthly hormonal cycle, then our ADHD traits wax and wane throughout the month. So a lot of girls manage and cope somewhat well, or are able to hide it or internalize it until they hit puberty and those hormones start to kick in. And then you're seeing weeks where these girls seem to not be able to function at all. And then weeks where it's like, well, you're thriving. Like, what's going on? ADHD. It's complex.
And like, I think I mentioned, like just observing like daughter, like just having to like do like the alphabet or the numbers. It's like the end of the world if she can't get it right the first time. And the emotions are so high, and it's like to re-regulate the emotions too. And for me, as someone that's like self-diagnosed, then my anxiety is high. I'm like, I've just given the role to my husband to teach her, because I feel like we're just like this. And we're both high on emotion.
I warn parents, kids with ADHD often subconsciously will seek dopamine in the easiest ways they possibly can. And often that is getting a rise out of a sibling or a parent. So kids with ADHD will often pick fights for absolutely no reason with siblings and pester them until they explode. And that is actually not a function of them trying to be obnoxious. It is their brain desperately trying to seek dopamine. And that is a really, really easy source of dopamine. And by trying to give consequences or punishing kids who are pestering their siblings, kids who have ADHD, it we're not helping at all. Mm-hmm. Instead, what we need to do is when these kids are pestering for what appears to be no reason, we should think about that as they are dopamine deficient. And we need to redirect them to a healthier source of dopamine. Mm-hmm. So that could be doing an activity that they love. A really great option is exercise. Exercise is so good for ADHD brains. And so, it's tricky because it looks like this child is being intentionally difficult. Yeah. Or they are just pushing your buttons as a parent because they're a pain. And that's how it appears. But when we understand what's going on neurologically, mm-hmm. we can go, oh, this isn't intentional. They're not trying to be trouble. Their brain is just desperate for what they're lacking. Let's redirect. So, mm-hmm. I think maybe something that might help the listeners is to go through some broad categories of things that are areas that are impacted by ADHD or ADHD traits, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the diagnostic criteria in the DSM, the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual that we have that we use to diagnose ADHD, mm-hmm. are three big categories. So inattention, which is the wrong term. What it really is dysregulated attention. Sometimes we don't have enough attention. Sometimes we have way too much attention. That's called mm-hmm. hyperfocus. So inattention or dysregulated attention, impulsivity, and hyperactivity. And hyperactivity, interestingly, again, can be externalized, which is what we typically think of. The boy who can't sit still, bouncing their leg, running around the classroom, races down the hall and can't walk. That's what we think of as hyperactivity, right? And that's externalized. And girls will present more internally with hyperactivity, but even their externalized presentation is generally more socially acceptable. So as an example, when I was in junior high, so grade 7, 8, 9 for me, I would cartwheel down the hallways if I was trying to escape class and, you know, going to get a drink or going to the bathroom for the 15th time, I'm sure, that day. But I would cartwheel down the hallway and then walk past the door so I wouldn't get in trouble of the classroom, and then cartwheel to the next doorway and then walk past, right? A boy who's constantly running down the hallway gets viewed as a hyperactive boy. Me, mm-hmm. I was just viewed as a gymnast, right? Oh, she's just a gymnast. She can't, like, and it's not equated to hyperactivity. So that's one of the struggles. But we can also have internalized hyperactivity. That is the restless internal sensation of always needing to be doing something. And a sense of almost anxiety over what I'm missing and not being able to relax because we always have to be doing something. It can be the bouncing thoughts from thought to thought to thought to thought with no time to pause and really consider anything. It can also be when we lay down to go to sleep, our brain starts racing. So that's internalized hyperactivity. And either way, it's hyperactivity.
Yeah.
So those are the diagnostic criteria, but that doesn't touch everything. We struggle with something called executive functions. Now, these can be categorized. I've seen it as few as 4 categories and as high as 10. I tend to categorize them into 8 categories. It's all the same thing. It's just how you tend to categorize these traits. Mm-hmm. But emotional regulation, that's an area of struggle for us. So our highs are really high and our lows are really low, and we can dive into those or switch between them very quickly. They make mm-hmm. sense for the situation, unlike mm-hmm. a mood disorder where they might not, the mood or the feeling might not be associated with something. So a neurotypical brain might look at us and go, yeah, I'd be frustrated too, but why are you that frustrated over this mm-hmm. thing? That's ADHD emotional dysregulation. Flexibility and adaptability. So that's being able to transition from task to task easily, being able to see one solution to a problem and then think of others. Mm-hmm. That's mental flexibility. Or like, we always take this way home, but the road is closed here. How else would you get home? The idea, the ability to switch from, well, this is how I always do it, to this is how else I could possibly do it. So that's flexibility and adaptability. Organization. So as I said before, that's external or internal organization. Working memory. So that our working memory is kind of a form of short-term memory. Yes. How do you nutritionally deal with these diagnoses? I have ADHD, if you don't know. So I will get distracted by all of these. I will get to that.
I'll just leave it up.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you. Yeah. So working memory. So working memory is a form of short-term memory where we take information and we hold it to use it. Yeah. And when we hold it to use it, then we can move it into long-term storage or recall information from long-term storage in our brain. But that all has to do with working memory. So we tend to have fewer kind of spots in our working memory, and things get booted out of those spots really quickly. So if I need to remember to do a task, I have to repeat it consistently or else it can get booted. Yeah. Frustrating. So working memory, so that's four. Number five is planning and prioritizing. Everything seems equally as important. And when I look at cleaning my kitchen for an example, yeah, all of it is one big giant task and I don't know how to separate it into smaller tasks. And if I can do that, then what goes first? I don't know. Everything is equally as important. Everything is equally as big. It is hard to plan and prioritize. Then there's self-awareness. So that's awareness of how our behavior, our choices impact others, how others may view us. That's also internal self-awareness of how we receive messages from our own body. Mm-hmm. As an example, kids with ADHD can take a long time to night train or not have accidents at night. And that's just because our brain doesn't always receive the signals from our body. We don't know that we're hungry until we're hangry. Yeah. Or I don't realize that I'm thirsty until I have a headache because I'm so dehydrated.
Yeah.
So those internal signals, we don't always receive that self-awareness. Two more, task initiation. And I throw in there task completion. Starting a task can be really hard, or completing the little itty bitty details at the end. That can be hard for us as well. And then the last one, time awareness or management, or what we like to call time blindness. In our brain, we don't see this continuum of time where, you know, this is happening now, and then here's the next thing in time, and there's the next thing. We perceive time as now and not now. And it's like we have no depth perception visually, but time-wise.
Yeah.
And I have been off when guessing what time it was during an event. I have been off by 3 hours or more. That's how my time blindness is terrible with my ADHD. So, those are the executive functions in the way I categorize them. And all of those are impacted to different degrees for each of us with ADHD, but it is important that executive functions are impacted for it to be ADHD. So there is another condition that we can talk about briefly later if we want to, that looks like ADHD. It's not yet a diagnosable condition, but there are a handful of researchers that are saying, nope, there's something else. It kind of looks like ADHD, but it doesn't have executive function challenges. It has the inattentive component and it's something else. So we can talk about that later. But I want to get to Terry's question here. How do you nutritionally deal with these diagnoses? Yes. Mm-hmm. Fantastic question. There's a lot of talk out there in the world about, as an example, red food dye and how it impacts those of us with ADHD. Nutritionally, nothing will fix ADHD. Nothing nutritionally will correct or improve ADHD. Mm-hmm. But having proper nutrition will take us to kind of our base level of ADHD traits. If anyone, neurotypical or neurodivergent, is eating garbage all the time, is eating poorly, isn't consuming a good amount of protein, that is quite important for ADHD brains in particular, but protein and, you know, fruits and vegetables and all those things, if we're not eating those, anybody is going to struggle with attention because our brain just can't operate to its best capacity.
Yep.
So eating well, having good nutrition, making sure we're getting adequate sources of protein and vitamins and carbohydrates and all the things will ensure that we are operating at the best we can at a base level of our ADHD traits.
Mm-hmm.
No study has shown a significant improvement with any sort of diet, any sort of supplementation for ADHD. There are mild improvements with high doses of omega-3s. So that is something that we can add in to support the ADHD brain. Mm-hmm. There's a few different minerals that we can be at higher risk of being low on. One of the biggest ones is iron. Some people with ADHD, for some unknown reason, are more likely to be anemic or have low iron storage. So that's something that can be tested with a doctor, and we can supplement appropriately for the level that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then things like red food dye, there's a few people out there, not just in the ADHD population, but in the population in general, that react poorly to red food dyes. It is an extraordinarily small number. And so I've a very small number of people with ADHD will find mm-hmm. that their symptoms are exacerbated by red food dye. But it's not the vast majority of us. And except for those few people, it doesn't improve anything for most of us. So mm-hmm. Yes, I have heard of Dr. Amin, and I have issues with some of the things he says. Some of the stuff he says really, really lacks scientific rigor behind it. I think there's a lot that he does well, a lot of his discussion he does well, but there are a lot of concerns out there in a lot of the research community about some of the stuff he says. And there are similar people who talk about ADHD as only trauma, and that is also not justified in science. So there's a handful of people out there that will tell you that it can be resolved with just supplementation, but it's not.
Yeah.
There are I'll just add one more thing. There are brain structural differences that we can note, and connectivity differences, and that's never going to be resolved with nutrition. Mm-hmm. We can support our brain by having the healthiest brain possible, but that doesn't actually resolve anything in the world of ADHD.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's one friend of a friend that they had, like, their little one got diagnosed with ADHD and I think hyperactive, and mm-hmm. they end up just telling him to take B12 supplements because they felt that the medicine that was given to him wasn't working, and so they just upped the B12 because they read that upping B12 will help regulate it more than, you know, the medication. What are your thoughts there?
It's not accurate according to research. Again, like, if we are deficit in B12, it can really help. If we have a deficit in B12, it is going to help any brain to supplement mm-hmm. with that, right? Yeah. Those things we need to be aware of, but that's not an ADHD specific thing. Will ideally, in our process of diagnosis, these things should be checked, and we should be seeing, oh, is our child low on iron? Is our child low on B12? And if we are, we mm-hmm. should be trying to manage those first before a diagnosis has been given.
Yeah.
Because ADHD really ultimately is a diagnosis of exclusion. We try and rule out anything else that could be presenting similar ways. Mm-hmm. And if it's not those things, then it's ADHD.
Just reading.
Yeah.
Is there? I'm just looking at the time before we go into the next question. I'm just going to say this now. Sometimes I get really, like, lost in the conversation lately, and I've been forgetting to do the midway. Thank you for our listeners. So for those tuning in, you're listening to Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. We are live on United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. We have 30 minutes left, so we can go in many different directions. For that, maybe because I did briefly talk about just the medication, I find there's just so much information out there for parents to kind of read and kind of get lost, and then nervous too, because you don't want to necessarily give kids medication not knowing what it is. So maybe we can kind of dabble in that.
Totally. For those that are interested in having a research-based understanding of ADHD medications and what they all actually do, I did a whole 40-part series on all of my social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, that walks through the very basics to what are the side effects, is there a chance that it could cause cardiovascular disease? I look at the studies and what they say, and I present that information in small bite-sized amounts. I also do a whole week in the course that I teach on ADHD treatments, including medication. ADHD medication, we have a few different classes of medication. So we have stimulants and non-stimulants. Stimulants are broken down then into two categories, amphetamine-based and methylphenidate-based. No, we're not giving our kids legal meth. It is different. Just throwing that out there. Yes, we are giving them amphetamines. That doesn't mean we're giving them methamphetamine. Yes. Although, side note, a legal form of methamphetamine is actually an approved treatment in the US for ADHD, but nobody really gives it. But it is, technically. Okay. I don't think it is anywhere else in the world. So, yeah, interestingly, just random side notes because I like doing those. So we have methylphenidate-based and amphetamine-based stimulants. And then in non-stimulants, we have a Strattera or amoxetine that is a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. And then there is an alpha-2 agonist, which is clonidine or guanfazine are the two medications in that category. Stimulants provide, they help our brain produce more dopamine and norepinephrine, which are the two neurotransmitters that we lack. And then they can also slow down the reuptake. So in a neuron, I'll try and keep this relatively simple, our neuron releases dopamine. It attaches to the next neuron. And then anything extra gets vacuumed back up for reuse later. Our vacuums can be overactive and go too fast. And so not allow the dopamine to actually exist long enough in the synapse for it to be effective. And so what the medication does is it helps create a little bit more and then slow down those vacuums. So there's more available to us in that synaptic gap. Mm-hmm. The other medication, so Strattera or atomoxetine, it is a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, doesn't do anything with dopamine, but it just slows down the reuptake inhibitor, the vacuum, for norepinephrine. And then the alpha-2 agonists, so clonidine and guanfazine, have a completely different way of working. They work on the other side of the synaptic gap, and they strengthen the message. Mm-hmm. So guanfazine, the approved, the brand name for it is Intuniv. And Intuniv was actually originally designed to go with a stimulant to then further strengthen the message that's being passed on to the next neuron. So it can be used independently or in conjunction with a stimulant medication.
Okay.
So that's the actual function in the brain.
Yeah, that's crazy. Thank you for sharing. I was going to ask, because you want to try out different medications, is there certain one that you would recommend first for parents with kids that just firstly got diagnosed to try out?
Yeah, great question. I'm not a doctor, so I can't give any, Terry, I don't, but if you reach out to me, Terry had a question about the, a specific gene mutation that affects the absorption of nutrients, which affects the brain. I've seen a little bit about it, not enough to give an answer right now, but reach out to me on social media and I will, I can follow up with you. Happy to do that. Okay. I'm not a doctor. Can't tell you what to do or what to try because it does depend on all other factors in your health. That being said, the majority of people will do well on and respond well to stimulants.
Okay.
Big caveat.
Yeah.
The majority of people, the first medication you try won't be the right fit. Mm-hmm. And with that can actually produce some really negative side effects. And that can be really scary as a parent. And I talk to a lot of parents that swear off all medication because the first one it wasn't the right fit.
Yeah.
But just because one isn't the right fit, even within a category, if you tried one amphetamine-based medication, that doesn't mean the other options aren't the right fit for you because it's not just the medication, which even in that category, there's different formulations of it, but it's also the delivery system and how your body responds to that delivery system.
Makes sense.
So there is an option that's a new and coming science. It isn't perfect by any means, but it's called pharmacogenetic testing. Oh. There's a ton of research. My home city, the hospital, the Children's Hospital and the university are doing some collaborative research on prescribing ADHD medications based on pharmacogenetic testing. But there's research being done all over the world. There's a bunch of companies where you just send off a cheek swab and they look for different some genetic differences that can impact the way that we process medications, including some ADHD medications. Doesn't cover all of them right now, but it can give you a place to start if you are worried about the shot in the dark type plan that we have right now, which is this is what the doctor thinks might be the best fit to start. And then if that one's not right, let's try something else. And then if that one's not right, try something else.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate way. There's a few people like me who found the right fit on the first go, and that's fantastic. And then there's people like my sister that it took 4 or 5 different ones to find the right fit. But finding the right fit has been so positively impactful. And she's so thankful now being an adult that my parents went through that process of trying to find the right fit, even though it took a while.
Mm. And also too, I'm just going to say, like, along the lines of, like, I have a friend just going through the similar thing. And I feel like he's old enough to understand his body and what works and what doesn't work. And maybe kids, like, I don't know what age, you might know what age they might start getting medication at. They might still not know what's working and not, and that is actually working for them, because they might not be able to fully advocate. I don't know if that's there, because I find like just even asking like my daughter who's almost 6, certain questions, I feel like it's really hard to kind of get the answer, a clear answer on that. So
totally
put them on medication. I don't know what age they actually would even start it at.
So in Canada and the US, typically medication is not recommended until 6 unless it's severe.
Okay.
In severe cases, it has been studied as young as 3.5 and has proven to be effective and safe. Now, the research also shows that it is safe and effective, although less effective than when kids hit about 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so that is, sorry, I'm getting distracted by the
comment.
Trying to stop on the side here, trying to refocus here. I got to change my sitting position. Maybe that'll help. It's true ADHD right here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the nice thing. I have the lived experience that I get to talk from too. Yeah. So that being said, there's also some really interesting research that's come out, and more studies are starting to show the same thing, that we have there is a neuroenhancing effect of taking stimulants over a longer term. And in that we can actually see long-term improvement in areas that are traditionally a struggle for the ADHD brain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really promising, as well as there's more and more research to show that giving medication, particularly stimulants, but medication earlier on is way more beneficial than waiting until things are, quote unquote, bad enough.
Yeah.
The reason for that is that there's a lot that we can actually save kids from by giving them access to medication earlier on. Kids end up socially isolated often when they have ADHD because of impulsivity and inattention and missing social cues and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
We can actually save them some of that social isolation. We can save them from becoming behind in school. We can actually, research shows that taking stimulant medication for teens with ADHD, particularly through the teen years, reduces the risk of substance abuse, alcohol and drug abuse. And smoking. And so there's a lot of things, and we can actually possibly prevent the development of oppositional defiant disorder, anxiety, and further development of anxiety and depression in teenage years. So giving kids access to medication, to a medication that gives their brain what they need to be able to do what's required of them in school, to be able to socialize, not that the way we socialize is wrong by any means, but experiencing that social isolation because of our impulsivity can be really, really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another part of, oh, and then the things you'd be looking for as a parent are things like emotionally, if rather than seeing a bit more emotional control, you see less emotional control, that can be a sign that it's not the right fit. If you're seeing increased anxiety or depressive type symptoms, that's a sign that it's not the right fit. If ADHD traits and struggles like focusing in class aren't improving, that probably means that it's not the right fit. And there's other factors, rage, sometimes like anger or rage, that can be another factor of the meds not being the right fit. So,
yeah. Thank you for that. And it's, and I find too, like it makes any parent nervous to start something like that because you just, there's just so much to research and you hear sometimes a lot of the negative, you get kind of thrown into the social media landscape too. Like TikTok has all their own stories over here that you have to really research because you can go into a black hole. And so it's really important to do, I think, your own research as a parent. Like we're going through with the pediatrician now, actually, both kiddos, well, let's hope with my one. My son is scared of needles. So we have yet to get blood taken. But with my daughter, I've requested to check the iron, just check everything else, just because of certain signs that I have seen. So, and then just making sure to cross the T's and making sure we can get things going as much as possible now. Luckily, we have a pediatrician to help us with all of us. And I just want to say she's the sweetest lady I have ever met.
Nice. Yeah, it helps to have
me too when I'm in there.
Yeah. Some doctors can be really, really wonderful. And it's tricky. It's tricky to find the right information. There's a lot of misinformation online, particularly about ADHD medication. There's a lot of fear mongering. And I think a lot of us think back to, you know, what we experienced in school where you saw a kid on ADHD medication, they walked around like a zombie. And that's not, that shouldn't be the case. That's a sign that it's not the right fit. And so, or we're being over medicated, and it shouldn't be that way. And there's so many more options available now that are formulated to manage some of those struggles, the crash afterwards, or manage, give an alternate so that we don't have to exist like that, because we don't, and we shouldn't. That should be an unacceptable side effect and a good sign that, nope, this is the wrong thing. Try something else. And finding people that have the information that they're giving you is backed by research is really important, because the fear mongering online about what so many people see as such a vital tool. I mean, I wasn't on medication until I was in my career at 24. And like, I've got 2 degrees that I did not on medication. And I am so thankful for medication at this point in my life. And I will happily be on this for the rest of my life as a choice that I am making, because my life is so much better on medication. Right. So there's a lot of fear, and I get that. I encourage people. I did this 40-part series not because it was a hit with social media platforms. They were not happy with me that I talked about this for so long. But my goal was to provide parents with free, accessible information that was research-based and real and true. And I'm not okay with the fear-mongering out there, because parents have enough on their plate. You've got enough overwhelm. And ADHD medication isn't the right fit for everybody, but it's like glasses. It's like giving our brain glasses. It really is what it's like. It's not this scary, well, you failed as a parent, so now you have to like medically straitjacket your child. That's not what it is. And nor should it appear that way. It's just another tool in our toolbox.
Yes. Because you said that you were a teacher for about 8 years. Do you have, if there's any teachers out there listening, because I've had friends who are teachers ask me questions of like, how do you kind of spot one in the classroom? Because I find, or like how to provide aid for them in the classroom. So the one example I know, what we put in like my daughter's document, she gets easily distracted. So we've put her in a group that is kind of more or less in the less distracting group, so she can focus over there.
Yeah, there's a lot of accommodations that we can provide. Unfortunately, there isn't one like, here's your, sorry. Let me reset my brain here and rethink. I'm getting distracted. Okay, there isn't one blanket strategy that will work for every child because our ADHD presents, so our ADHD traits present so differently. So one student who is highly and easily distractible, that child may do really well in a group where there's a lot of focused students because body doubling is a really effective strategy. For other kids, they will talk to anybody around them and being in a group isn't as effective, but they may do really well sitting on their own. And there may be a child who, even when they sit on their own, will go into their brain and create magical kingdoms and be distracted in their own brain, regardless of how few distractions are around them, but can really thrive when they're listening to music and have enough stimulation in their brain. It really is unique for each student and each, the way that each unique ADHD brain presents. I did a professional development session recently at a school, and I had an hour. And I was like, I can't even scratch the surface in an hour. Here's a really fast rundown of some basic strategies. But I am creating a course for teachers that I hope to launch officially next year to just do a deep dive, because it's so complex. There's so many things and so many presentations.
Yeah. And that's just growing up in school myself, like I found it really difficult because a lot of teachers didn't really understand or want to take the time to understand, or there are some good teachers that really did want to. So there's like a handful that I remember growing up that really wanted to take the time to make sure that I can excel in the classroom than be left behind. Mm-hmm. And I love those teachers who really want to really support the kids in the classroom.
Yeah. Well, and it's tricky because a lot of kids with ADHD are some of the most challenging kids to teach in a larger classroom, but they are some of the sweetest, most wonderful kids one-on-one. And so it's hard. Research, there's one doctor who has a quote that says that for kids with ADHD, by the time that they are 12, they will experience 20,000 more negative messages than their neurotypical peers. It's hard having ADHD. And so one of the best things we can do for these kids is constantly be in their ear, assuring them that they are loved and accepted exactly the way they are, with no need to change, because that boost of you believe in me, you care about me, and you love me exactly how I am, can encourage and can motivate our brain to do everything we can to try and make your life easier as a teacher. And that doesn't mean we are going to be easy. Some of us are, because we are more of the internalized presentation and we just kind of disappear into our own head and don't cause problems. But those are the kids that fly under the radar. And then you get to report card time, you're like, oh my goodness, what have they been doing? So those kids aren't the kids that are, you know, in your face and jumping out of their seat and calling out constantly in class. But all of us, because there's a lot of shame in ADHD. And the way ADHD presents tends to be viewed as moral failings, as not being good enough, not trying hard enough. And that is so far from the truth, that we're often, well, you know, she'd do really well if she just did her homework, or if she just lived up to her full potential, or, you know, all these comments that are well-meaning, but are incredibly shame-based and heartbreaking for us, because we are trying, we are doing everything we can within our power to live up to our potential, but we're being given neurotypical tools and those just don't work for us.
Do you have any tips for parents with it to get diagnosed if they kind of feel, you know what, I've been listening to you here today or seeing things on TikTok or whichever, I want to take the next steps. What could be some next steps for some parents?
The first things I always encourage parents, whether I was a teacher or now as an ADHD educator, is to get a good checkup done with the doctor, including ideally some blood work, do a hearing test and a vision test. If you can't see the board or you can't hear the teacher, of course you're going to appear distracted and struggle with your work. Of course, that makes total sense. So we should have those crossed off and know that those are all up to snuff. And then in the US and in Canada, not the same all around the world, but for us in the US and Canada, typically family doctors are able to diagnose, pediatricians are able to diagnose. There are psychologists that will do a full formal testing suite called a psychoeducational testing, which leads to a psychoeducational report, which can diagnose ADHD amongst other learning disabilities or other mental health concerns or conditions. And then a psychiatrist is the other person who can do very similar testing. And they are just also able to guide you on that medication journey. But your family doctor or pediatrician could also do the medication journey. So if you are looking like, we need help right now, we are drowning and struggling, go to your doctor. That is going to be your fastest route to diagnosis if your doctor is comfortable diagnosing. Most pediatricians are. It affects approximately 10% of kids out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of us out there. And so pediatricians are pretty well acquainted with it. And then if you're looking for a deeper dive and more understanding about processing speed and working memory ability, and if there might be other learning needs in there, then go the route of a psychologist or a psychiatrist who can go through a formal psychoeducational assessment.
I still remember mine.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I remember it. I remember like walking into this room and it was stinky and he was old.
That's funny.
It was like 2 days. Like, I don't know why. That's what I remember.
Yeah, totally. For a while, we had a psychologist at our school where I was teaching who knew that I had ADHD. And of course, teachers have to fill out these forms. And she'd hand me another one and be like, okay, I can do this. Do you want me to just read it to you and I'll fill it in for you? I'm like, yes, please. Thank you for accommodating my ADHD. I appreciate this. So,
amazing. I'm just looking at the time here. I had like two. Maybe you want to talk a bit about your toolkits because we haven't really fully dove into that. So anyone listening, they can go into your website and get all the stuff that they need.
So 3 times a year, I run the ADHD toolkit for parents, working, testing right now, one for adults, and there'll be a teacher one and a young adult one eventually down the road. Amazing. But it's a 12-week super deep dive into ADHD. So I go through week one is all about ADHD. Week two is all about treatment. I look at what works research-wise surrounding treatment. And then week three, I go through some general strategies. Week four is parenting. And then we deep dive into traits. And then the last week, we talk about how do we work with the school? What accommodations can we ask for our students? And parents continually report back to me that they, through the course, become far more educated on ADHD than the majority of educators out there. The majority of teachers receive, unfortunately, very little training on ADHD. And so I walk through everything. And I do it from a neurodivergent affirming lens where I say, look, we're not denying the hardship, but we also acknowledge the beauty that is the ADHD brain. We have beautiful pieces. And if I could wave a magic wand today and get rid of my ADHD, I wouldn't. Because I love the beautiful parts of my ADHD brain. There's such unique pieces. So I highlight all of those throughout the course as well. It's given 12 weeks of deep dive information in video format because I hate reading and writing. So I'm not giving that to anybody. I'd rather record, make my paper notes, and then I talk. But I put them into smaller videos, anywhere from like 5 to 15, maybe 20 minutes at longest. And then that's delivered weekly with a few content breaks throughout for people to catch up or take vacation or whatever. And then from there, I also provide group coaching. So the ability to get on to calls with other parents in similar spots to you with the same learning as you and ask questions. Or I've had parents say like, hey, things fell apart this weekend. Here's what happened. Can you help me figure out what I can do better next time? Or how can I support my child through this emotional event or this struggle with managing their Easter candy or, you know, whatever it is. And we walk through it together. There's so much benefit from seeing other parents and hearing other parents' questions, because often other people ask the questions we didn't know that we should have been asking. Mm-hmm. I had one parent when I was testing the course, actually, walked me through their child who was really struggling with having a very negative mindset and complaining all the time and that kind of stuff. And so I was walking the parent through and said, you know, we know that depression is comorbid with ADHD. They go hand in hand sometimes. Mm-hmm. You really need to have your child assessed for depression, along with here's a bunch of strategies. And another parent on the call went, oh my goodness, that's my child. And went mm-hmm. and had their child assessed, diagnosed with depression. And then they accessed medication for their child. And for the first time in 3 years, they saw the light at the end of the tunnel because of what another parent asked. Right. So the beauty of group coaching and getting together. And then I have a private community as well on Facebook for parents to get in and support each other and celebrate the wins and commiserate mm-hmm. the hard together, because that's important too.
I love it.
And yeah, so I run it every September, January, and April or May start, depending on how the year falls. But yeah.
That's so exciting. And then I have up here, register for September's cohort. Did you want to talk a bit more about that? Because it closes at a certain time, or is there a wait list?
Yeah. So I do an application process just because I want to ensure that this is going to be the right fit for everybody that comes mm-hmm. in. And I do limit my cohorts to 30 right now so that I can support parents really well. I'm very active. It's not just here's the information and you never see me again. Mm-hmm. You get lifetime access to all of the video content in the course, as well as any future updates. But I'm super involved throughout those 15 weeks that we walk through the material together. So I limit it to 30 people so that I can be well invested in these people. And like, man, I get sad when these cohort ends. I cry. I miss these families. It's strange, really, like strange parasocial relationships, but I love these families so much. So 30 families max at this point. So I have an application process. It is open from now until the course is full, or we start, which is, I believe, September 9th is the start date for this cohort. There's right now I have a 6-month payment plan available, and I'll have that available until the end of June. So if people are needing that extended payment plan, that's available. Otherwise, you can save a little bit if you do a single payment, or there's a 3-month payment plan always available as well.
Nice.
And then for this freebie that's on the screen, this is a part of I think almost 20-part series that I did on social media. If you want to check that out, about our kids with ADHD who fall apart after school at home. This is called Restraint Collapse. And I talk about spoon theory, and I've created this idea of a transition menu, a way for kids to have autonomy in choosing things that help them restore their spoons, restore their executive functioning mm-hmm. capacity as mm-hmm. they transition from school, where there's a lot of output needed and they try and keep it together and mask at school and focus all their energy and effort on getting school done. And then they come home and collapse because they've got nothing left. So a way to transition a little bit more smoothly.
That's amazing. I'm going to check that out for sure. Yeah. Well, thank you, Kendall, for coming in. Thank you for all our listeners, the questions. Thank you for everyone who did participate, because we had a good chunk of questions coming in there. The United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Next week, we welcome Nadine back, our life coach, with a special guest, Ruba, and we're going to be talking all things parenthood, struggles, and motherhood. It's going to be a 3-week series, really, of all the good stuff. So with that, until next week, remember, your journey is unique and your worth is unquestionable. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.